Hey, Sister Brunch family, before we dive into today's incredible episode, we want to share something special with you. Did you know that you now can become an essential part of the Sister Brunch community? You're already doing so much for us. We appreciate your reviews. We appreciate your likes and follows on social media, but you can also join our Patreon community to unlock some community events together and most importantly, be a driving force behind the magic of Sister Brunch. Check out patreon.com/sisterbrunch to learn how you can support us in continuing to bring you the stories of Black women and gender expansive people thriving in entertainment and media. Thank you so much. Welcome back, sisters and siblings. I'm Fanchon Cox. I'm your host for season 5 of Sister Brunch. Now, before we jump into today's episode with our amazing guest, whose bio includes working with Taraji P. Henson, Prince and Barack Obama, I am so excited to share that for some of our episodes this season, we will be joined by a special co-host from Black Girls Film Camp. You can learn all about Black Girls Film Camp on their website, blackgirlsfilmcamp.org, and on their amazing Instagram page at Black Girls Film Camp. And our co-host today will share lots more about their important work. A warm, nurturing welcome to my co-host Jessica Johnson.
Thank you, Miss Fanchon. I'm so excited to be here. I'm so excited to be able to co-host. And I'm just over the moon to be able to talk about Black Girls Film Camp, my experiences with them, what I'm doing now in film and all that stuff. So
Jessica, tell us about your experiences with Black Girls Film Camp and then also about the film that you made.
Yes. Okay. So what Black Girls Film Camp is, it's a national organization now that hosts 10 girls nationally every year, and they fully support the girls and their films and the stories that they want to tell. You're given an editor, a creative coach, a whole bunch of amazing mentors that, and you're able to work with them, learn editing. I think now you get Premiere Pro, which I didn't get in my first year, but
the first year always misses out on some of the amazing things, but still it's good.
I think in every interview I've done, I've always dropped that, and Dr. Jamika Anderson, which is our co-founder for Black Girls Film Camp, always laughs at me because she's like, Jess, you know, you were our trial, you were our baby,
and that's
now
right.
We're just elevating.
That's
but
right.
I've been so incredibly blessed with so many amazing opportunities. And so even after you produce your short film through Black Girls Film Camp, you are given so many amazing opportunities to be able to like go out and actually put your film in front of people's faces, which
yes.
is not that common, and especially for people our age. Black Girls Film Camp is 13 to 18 year olds. So it's been amazing. I've just been blessed with so many different opportunities like this, being able to co-host Sister Brunch.
Yes.
But my short film, Colorblind, was about just a really personal experience, which I just felt was something that I really wanted to tell. The first year that Black Girls Film Camp was out was in 2021, so right after 2020. And I had a childhood best friend who was white or is white. And I had some really, I would say, transformative experiences through 2020 dealing with that and being so close to her and her family and just all of those things that come with just your childhood innocence and like not really seeing color or what comes with that. It felt like a piece of me was gone throughout that whole 2020 going into 2021. I didn't really know like who I was. I didn't really know what I really wanted to pour myself into. I knew what I liked. I knew that I was always interested in film and creative industries and stuff like that. But I never really knew like what stories were important to me until that happened. And I think that was my transformative point where I went from, I'm going to start telling my stories without thinking about the perception of others and what other people
yes.
are going to think about what I'm putting out. So
yes.
I think that was really important. And Black Girls Film Camp gave me the platform to do that. I would say it was my healing process. It was what allowed me to step into who I am now and be where I'm at now.
Beautiful.
And I think that's one of the most beautiful parts of not just Black Girls Film Camp, but storytelling in general. You're just able to put your voice into an everlasting place.
Absolutely. And I think that's what Dr. Jamaica Anderson and Sierra Davis, the co-founders of Black Girls Film Camp, really understand about it. What they can offer to these girls is exactly that kind of experience where you're just starting to even come into your own identity. And then to be told, here's how to do it, and here are the resources to actually make a film about it. I just love it. Well, I have to say that when I sent out the names of the upcoming guests and asked the Black Girls Film Camp alum who they wanted to interview, Jessica jumped on this chance. So I know you've been doing a little bit of digging into session artists' bio. So please introduce our fabulous guest for today.
Okay, so today we have Ms. Sasheen Artis with us. Sasheen is a two-time Emmy-winning producer and is the founder and CEO of Plenty of Pi, a curriculum-based talent incubator and media production accelerator that offers leadership development, practical producer skills training, mentorship, and access to production and distribution resources with the goal of empowering creatives of color. Her impressive career spans over 25 years, working with luminaries like President Barack Obama and producing impactful films like Birthing Justice. Sasheen's latest film, Birthing Justice, addressing Black maternal health outcomes, debuted at the Congressional Black Caucus, screened for 200 countries at the United Nations, and is part of the continuing education course for the American Medical Association, and it currently airs on PBS. Sasheen, thank you for joining us today. We'd love to know about the journey you've been on to end up being the founder of an incubator. You can start as far back as you like.
Oh my God. Okay. Well, thank you. Thank you so much, Jessica, for that amazing introduction. You know, when you listen to, you know, what people say about you, you're like, oh, wow, I'm tired. I must be very tired.
It is a lot of work. All I thought was badass. And I can only say that because Jessica's on the older side of the alumni. So I hope that's okay. But yes.
Let's start from the beginning. I'm originally from New York. I'm from Harlem, the daughter of a single parent, grew up very, very poor. This is not, you know, silver spoon experience. This is truly from the hood. And understanding that in order to get out of the hood, I had to focus on education. And so my mom and her sisters and her brothers were very instrumental in making sure that I read a lot, stayed in school, did lots of after school programs, all the things that I needed to know to really excel. So I went to public school all my life. And when I graduated high school, I was accepted into Stanford University. And it was a culture shock because, you know, growing up in Harlem, in New York, it's cold. And then going to Stanford where, you know, you go down Palm Drive and there's nothing but palm trees and there's the Memorial Church in the distance. And it's like, you know, you hear the angels singing, ah! You know, you arrived. And it's like, oh, my God. And graduated with a degree in psychology. And in honest truth, I had absolutely no plans of being in the entertainment industry whatsoever. Okay. And when I was about to graduate, it was like March of my senior year. I'm a member of Sigma Gamma Rho sorority, and I pledged the last quarter of my senior year, so I didn't mess up my GPA or any of that. Mm-hmm. And I was in the middle of writing my graduate school applications. And I distinctly heard this voice say, "This is not what I have planned for you." And I'm like,
wow.
Oh, okay. And when you think about it, that was a 16-year-old, because I graduated high school at 16. My idea of being a clinical psychologist was a 16-year-old's idea of what she was going to do with her life. Mm-hmm. And so I literally stopped and I said, okay, God, whatever you want me to do, I will do it. And so I spent the summer on campus. I had a job already lined up, saved some money. I flew down here, tried to find an apartment, rented a car to go back up to campus, get all my stuff, and came down here. This is total faith walk that I've been on for the entire time that I've experienced this. So total faith.
And look at everything you've done. And I love the example of both you and Jessica. She's in your first year, Jessica, of your college program, right? Yes. Coming out of Black Girls Film Camp. She's like, this is the thing. And Sasheen, you were like, I wasn't sure that this was a thing. And then you had that calling. But for both of you, it was a call. It is a calling, isn't it?
This was something that it was not even on the radar. You know, I didn't take, film classes. I didn't go to film school. This
didn't have any exposure through family or anything.
Nothing. I mean, I liked movies. I went to the movies every week with my mom, growing up and actually watched the credits to see, the hundreds and hundreds of people that it takes to make a film. But never in my wildest imagination would I have ever even imagine that, oh my God, I would be a producer. And clearly it was a struggle. I came down here, had no resources, nobody. I couldn't pick up the phone and just get a job. And I struggled. I got evicted from my first apartment, got evicted from the second apartment. It was not an easy road. But in so doing, I ended up temping. And my first temp job was actually on a construction site as a project manager, worked there for a summer, made a little bit of money. And then my second position as a temp was through a Black-owned company called Executive Temps. They're still in business. They still support Black people going into the industry. Amazing organization. The founder is Ted Milner. His wife, Stacy Milner, runs an organization called HBCU in LA. And so he hired me. He saw my resume. He saw my potential. And I'm sure God said, hire this girl. My first position was at Paramount Pictures in the accounting department. And my only job was to literally stamp purchase orders all day. That's all I did. And I did it for like 3 months. I went in the morning on time, said my good mornings, then started my work, breaked for lunch, came back on time and finished my work. I didn't know anyone. I didn't make friends. I didn't network. I didn't do anything. And literally within 3 months, and a woman walked by my desk that I said good morning to day in, day out. And she said, Sasheen, I'm leaving the company. Do you want my job? Sure. I don't know what you do.
Yeah, you're like, whatever it is. Something different than stamping.
Yeah, I will take the job. And so she was a Black woman, and she was actually the secretary to the vice president of creative services at Paramount Home Video. Vice president was a Black woman. And so I learned what the desk did and supported her. I was hired permanently. And, it was all about marketing and, psychology is all about understanding people and marketing is all about psychology. So it was a perfect space for me to start. And it was brilliant. It was, I was on the lot, I was just, going to the commissary, doing all those things. And it was like, okay, I made it. This is Sasheen Artis, and you are listening to Sister Brunch.
Hi, this is Jessica Lynette, and you're listening to Sister Brunch, the podcast by and about Black women and gender expansive people thriving in entertainment and media. Stay tuned for more of our conversation with our phenomenal guest, Sasheen Artis. Also, please do us a favor. If you love Sister Brunch, please leave a review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify.
We will just say how important it is for us as Black women, for women of color as well, to reach out and make these kinds of offers for one another, right? Like, that means everything. And fortunately, on this show, we get to hear that kind of story all the time. And I just love it. But those of you who are listening, if you haven't done that yet, reach out and think about who can fill your position when you leave, right? Oh.
Collaboration over competition.
Yep,
absolutely. Yes. Because there's plenty of pie.
Yes. It's such a beautiful.
I love that. I know. That's what you stand for. I know Jessica wants to ask about one of the projects she talked about in your bio, through all of your producing work, which obviously you went from that desk to becoming a full-fledged producer who's now hired by the PGA to teach producers how to do what they do.
Yes. It's been crazy. So yes, please, Jessica, ask away.
So my question for you is, but your latest film, Birthing Justice, addresses critical issues in Black maternal health. So How do you believe storytelling, especially through documentaries, contributes to societal change and awareness?
I think documentary, and it's particular documentaries. There are documentaries out there that are great, they're engaging, but there are impact docs that are really created to address particular issues, to bring awareness, and to motivate action. I've done a lot of different types. I've done bio docs where it's a historical doc. I've done personality docs with LA Phil conductor Gustavo Dudamel and former Secretary of State Hillary Clinton. And I've done a lot of impact docs where you are really looking at an issue and how that issue affects the community, affects the region, and affects the nation. And then also talking about how can we change what's going on with regards to this issue. And so I think documentary is really critical because it's not necessarily meant to speak to everyone. It's meant to speak to the folks that can actually change the thing. Because entertainment speaks to everyone. You can be entertained in all different types of situations. But when you're talking about documentary, and particularly impact doc, you want to get it in front of the people who can actually do something about it. When you put it in front of the right people, the people who can actually change the thing, that's when it is the most powerful.
I love that. Yeah, that's exactly like the type of thing that I think we really need, because there's so many different things that are going around about like what the entertainment industry as a whole can actually even contribute to the many, many issues that are going on in our society right now. And I think it's really important for us to recognize that there are certain genres that are meant for pure entertainment, and there are certain genres where you can actually inspire change, real, like tangible change through that. So I think that's amazing. And quick follow-up question, how have you personally gone about finding those spaces where you're even listened to and you can even pour your expertise and what you want to put out into the world into people who want to listen?
So with documentary, and particularly the documentaries I do, if there's an issue to be tackled, I'm not working on that issue. I'm not in the trenches on that issue. I'm the filmmaker. Yes. So I need to reach out to those folks that are in the trenches, that are combating this issue every day, that they're facing these challenges, and I help them tell that story. Then it's my responsibility as the producer to get it in front of the people to listen to that story and who can help affect the change in that story. So for me, it's about partnership and collaboration and understanding as a documentarian, as a filmmaker, as a producer, not a director, but as a producer, my responsibility is to partner with the folks that know. I can do all the research, but I don't know because I'm not living that experience. I'm not in those trenches. I need to partner with an organization, partner with a person, partner with a company, whomever it is that is dealing with that issue, to say, hey, let me help you spotlight, amplify, you know, make known to the folks that can make change for you. And that's what I do.
Yeah.
I wonder if part of your question, because Jessica, I think about this all the time, especially with our guests, knowing the barriers and the challenges that we have in particular, how do you start to develop those relationships? What things did you have to do for people to pick up the phone?
I think it starts with research, and it starts with, particularly with documentary, is I always start with a question. What is the question I want to answer in this documentary? And then from that question, ask myself and then put this on paper, who can answer these questions? Who can be the one to answer? And it may not be one source. It may be four or five different people. It's really being very intentional when I'm tackling an issue like Black maternal health, and you're saying, okay, not only am I tackling this issue, but there are, you know, two or three or four other documentaries tackling this issue. So we know it's an important issue. How am I going to tell this story different? What lens am I coming from differently than those other documentaries? Because we all have a place at the table. We're all talking about this particular issue. It's not about competition. It's about making sure that the lens is 360. So making sure that with the documentary Birthing Justice, we partnered with a national organization that lobbies particularly for Black maternal health issues. So that way, We know exactly the work that they're doing. We know what they can do. You pick up the phone and say, hey, I'm a documentarian, and we really would like to help amplify your story. Mm. That's how you literally, you just pick up that phone.
I wanted to know, like, just from your standpoint, do you think that it's equally or more important to get those same stories in front of people or may have differing views on whatever it is that you're trying to present?
Absolutely. I think it's important to be a well-rounded person to know what's going on in the world. But sometimes documentary isn't necessarily the vehicle for that. That's when entertainment actually does come into play. Because you can actually teach people about certain things in entertainment, and they don't understand or know that they're actually being taught about a certain thing. Just because they're invested in the character and, oh my God, Mary is having a baby and she's having complications, and they don't know that, oh, I'm being taught about this particular issue that's going on in the world.
I love that, Sasheen. And I think you're an example of a producer who does all of the above. So I don't know if you want to talk about any of the projects that you have that are kind of more on the surface. They look more like entertainment. But knowing you, there's also a lesson in there. There's impact in there, too.
I have a couple of projects that are still in development, so I can't really share too much. But I've been involved, like, as a mentor with other projects that are entertainment focused, that are love stories or mother-daughter relationships. And I feel for me, with regards to entertainment, we always have to understand, first of all, it is a business, and the goal is to engage your audience. And in order to do that, you have to understand your audience, and you have to go to where they are. Entertainment, you're really looking at entertainment for an awareness, not necessarily a change. Documentary, if it's impact doc, then you're looking more so for change. Whether it's Inconvenient Truth, you want people to be aware, hey, there's a climate shift happening. We should do something about this before it's too late. Those are the spaces where both things teach. It's just teaching in a different way and teaching to a different audience.
Yes. Sasheen is a mentor on a film that I'm executive producing called Flash Before the Bang. And it's another one where we pitch it as entertainment. It's an underdog sports story, but it's about an all deaf high school track team. So it is still about, we have this impact because it's an underrepresented group, right? But we hope for the audience to laugh and, you know, kind of not realize that they're also, and cry and not realize necessarily that they are also learning. But if they go and support the Americans with Disabilities Act afterwards, having seen it, then we'll be glad. We will have planted some seeds. I love it. So Sasheen, tell us about Plenty of Pie, because you are not only the producer of all these projects, a mentor for so many projects, a guide and facilitator for the PGA, but you also are a founder of your own company, Plenty of Pie. And I know you've got some great programs that are happening right now.
Absolutely. So back in 2020, you know, when we're all locked down in COVID, and I was going through our last year of the Producers Guild Power Diversity Master Workshop. And originally that program was a in-person program. We had to pivot to Zoom. And, you know, the question was, can I build community over Zoom? And when I figured out that, yes, you can, and as long as you're providing that support, you can build community and you can build relationships and you can make magic. And so in 2020, I was like, okay, what am I going to do with the rest of my life? The world is ending. And I decided to really double down on this idea of producing leadership and training and making sure people understand what the role of a producer is and how they can take charge of their creative space by becoming producers. So lots of writers programs, lots of directors programs, you got animation, all the things, but there's very few opportunities for people to have that pathway to leadership. And for me, Plenty of Pie is the way for folks to understand exactly what it takes to become a producer, what skills you need, the leadership, you know, those soft skills that people don't really talk about in terms of communication and intentional listening.
Psychology degree.
Exactly, exactly. Right? Yeah. You know, conflict resolution, all the things that you need to do as a producer and then training them in standards-based, because there are actual standards that the state of California has in terms of workforce development, like what folks need to learn. So it's a standards-based program. And for our incubator, it's about training, it's about mentorship, and it's about access. Our accelerator program is really focused on the projects, much like, you know, Y Combinator or Techstars. It's a full ecosystem where it's developing that project, connecting that creative to a mentor producer that's going to walk them through the entire process hand in hand. It's a contractual relationship where the mentor is getting paid because it's basically producerial work. And then connecting them to distribution and to financing so that they can get this project in front of the audience that they intended. And I've recently launched a series called Demystify Entertainment, basically as a lead up to my incubator cohort, to just teach people about certain aspects of the business that have been so opaque, whether, you know, talking about like documentary and working with PBS. I get a lot of questions about, well, how do you work with PBS? Can you make money with PBS? You know, all the things. It's like, well, let me put this in a webinar. This is what you do to work with PBS. I have another course called TV Series Development and Working with Creative Execs. What is the relationship between the executive and the writer? Because a lot of folks, you know, they have these pie in the sky ideas and they want all the things. And it's like, well, no, this is how we get you to green light. This is how we get you on air. And this is how you stay on air. And then the last one, up to now at least, is on raising money for
that
media projects.
It is the thing.
This is specific. It's not talking about like equity and financing. This is talking about the money that you don't have to pay back. The money that's like corporate sponsor and grants and all those folks that if you want to do a documentary or a documentary series, all the folks that are willing to give you money and fund that thing, how do you raise that money? And what are those step-by-step, you know, that strategy that you can use to get your media project on air?
Yes. And it matters. I feel like there are programs out there like Sundance has Sundance Collab. It matters that a Black woman with the experience that you have, it does. It matters to us to have a leader for these classes that looks like us, that has some shared experiences. And it matters to others as well, that they need to see that you are a person who has had this kind of success, has these experiences, and are open to sharing them. And also that way they can hear what is it like for you to be in this industry. Sometimes I know when we share all the work we do, other folks, their minds are a little bit blown.
We do a lot. I'll just tell this one story. It goes back to what Jessica mentioned in my bio about working with Prince. So back in the day, years ago, it was like, I guess, 2009, I was working with Tavis Smiley, and he's a broadcaster. He has a radio program, all the things. And he and Prince were really good friends. And so Tavis had asked Prince if he could do a benefit concert. And he asked him a while ago, you know, like, we had some time. So I was in the middle of producing his annual State of the Black Union. It was like this 10th year extravaganza, exhibitors, receptions, luncheons, and as well as the 6-hour symposium that was broken up into two parts. So I'm producing that. And I told Tavis, I said, please do not come at the last minute with the concert because I can't do it. And so it was a Monday. And at the end of the day, Tavis comes into my office and he's like, yeah, Prince said yes. And I'm like, okay. The concert was scheduled for Saturday.
No.
So the caveat was we couldn't promote it because he was in the middle of that 21-day every night concert thing he was doing. And he had already had a contract. So we couldn't promote it. And mind you, we don't have a venue for a concert with Prince. So where are we going? That was Monday evening. So Tuesday, we had to scout all over Los Angeles to find a location. Luckily, Sheila E. at the time, I don't even know if it's still around, but the Conga Room was, she was a part owner. And so she allowed us to use the Conga Room. Brilliant. Okay, so we had a location. Perfect. We had Prince. Now the question is, well, how are we going to get people there if we can't promote it. So from Wednesday to Friday, I had those amount of days to build a ticketing system and then try and get the word out. Needless to say, we did it. We sold out. And I literally didn't sleep for 37 hours. It was a tremendous success. And there's actually like an old article, you could Google it. I think LA Weekly did, about the concert and, you know, Cornel West dancing on the stage. And I mean, it was hilarious. It was that tremendous. Was you. And so, that was yeah. You. And I slept. I was like, I'm done. Everyone happy? Okay, I'm going. I'm going to go
and turn it off my
phone. But that was one of those things where, so I know for me, if it doesn't rise to that level, I can do it, because that's the bar that has been set in my life, where it's just like, oh, I have 4 days to put on a Prince concert, and it's Prince, so you want to sell it out. You know?
Yes. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. That's our plight. And I love having a younger person here to hear that. Things like self-care, absolutely important. Mm. Sleep, important. And also the work is important. So if you get an opportunity, or every opportunity you get, unless you're being abused in that opportunity or oppressed in that opportunity, then just be gone, right?
Yeah.
But if you're not, then you have to work that hard. Yep. And I feel like that comes full circle to Jessica's original question, like, how do you get people to pick up the phone? It's because you do things like that. Yeah. Right. Like, people see you doing that kind of work, and now they're going to keep calling you. And everybody now knows that she's the one that brought Prince to the Conga Room. Yes. In LA. And they're going to be like, you can produce anything if you can get that done in those 5 days. It's so hard, because I feel like we just scratched the surface every time. I'm just scratching the surface with Jessica. She's amazing. And Jessica, we wish you so much joy and resilience and challenges, so that you keep getting pushed to do more and more. Go find Sasheen, support her work.
You could go on my website, www.plentyofpie.net, and my webinar series is called Demystify Entertainment. So www.plentyofpie.net/demystify-entertainment.
Hi, it's Jessica, alumni of Black Girls Film Camp and co-host of Sister Brunch for today's episode. You're listening to Sister Brunch. We'll be right back. And during this very quick break, if you haven't already, follow us on Instagram at Sister Brunch Podcast.
We're back and excited to share more of this conversation with co-host Jessica Johnson and our guest Sasheen Artist. Okay, now we have our signature Sister Brunch question, which Jessica will ask you.
Yes. Okay. So imagine you're having a sister brunch with your younger self. What are you both eating? What are you drinking? What advice would you give her?
Wow. I think what I would be eating, my younger self would probably be eating like a Chinese chicken salad. Younger self.
Yes.
Today's self would probably be eating like those little like avocado rolls, or, you know, something that you could dip and kind of, you know, have some, you know, appetizer fun. So that's today's.
Nice. So sister brunch, you know, we got to get a little tipsy.
Right. But back in the day, it would probably just been like a Pepsi. But now it would be sangria.
Okay. Yes. I didn't discover until I was older that there's a white sangria and a red sangria.
Red sangria,
Do you
yes.
have a preference?
I like red. Mm-hmm, I like red. Mm-hmm.
Me too. Yes.
Is it sad that I know what that is?
No, it's sad that I know what that is.
My mom taught me that.
That's okay. Yeah, see, that's
good.
your mom who taught you. That's good.
Awesome. What advice would you share with her?
I would say start temping as soon as you get to Los Angeles. Don't try and open doors. One. Just start temping. Because the thing about temping is that people are paying you while you are learning. You're learning whatever that desk is. You're learning whatever that job is. And it is probably the best way to, first of all, know if you want to be at a company. And it's the best way, particularly for the entertainment industry, to learn about all of the aspects of the industry. Because a lot of times we focus just on production, but there are so many things that people can do. and still be in the entertainment industry. You could be a teacher and be in the entertainment industry. You could be a lawyer. You could be an engineer. You could be a finance person, an accountant. There's so many different things. And I think if you start as a temp, you get that exposure to the wide world of entertainment. And you're making money in the process. So I would tell her definitely keep, you know, start making money immediately.
That's brilliant. that's
the gem right there.
It is. It's so practical. I realize we haven't had that kind of very clear practical advice to our younger selves. And that is it, because then you have a roof over your head. You're not starving, right? You have something consistent. And will you say the name of the company that you temped with again?
Yeah. Executive Temps. They're out of Burbank. Black owned, amazing, amazing company, very supportive.
Session artist, thank you so much for being on Sister Brunch.
Thank you so much for having me. It's so nice to meet you, Jessica.
It's so, so nice to meet you as well. Thank you so much for joining in conversation, entertaining my questions.
Absolutely.
And Jessica, I'm so proud to co-host with you. You were fantastic. And
oh my God.
Reach out to the aunties. We're officially the aunt. I hope that's totally. Okay, Sashine. Oh, totally. Yeah, yeah.
I'm an only child. So yeah, I will always be an auntie.
I'm an only child. Yes. I'm an only child. Yes. So I have tons, and my mom was an only child. I have tons of adopted aunties. So.
Oh my goodness.
Welcome to the family.
Absolutely. Thank
proud
you.
To be
thank
part
you.
Of it. Thanks for joining us for another episode of Sister Brunch. You can read the transcript of every episode and find show notes on our website at sisterbrunch.com. If you love video and you want to see the lovely faces of our guests and our co-hosts, you can watch the full video interviews on the Trujillo YouTube channel, youtube.com/Trujillo Media, T-R-U-J-U-L-O Media. We also really appreciate your support by subscribing to our podcast, leaving us a great review, sharing it with friends, family, colleagues, and community, and, you know, just giving us all the love.
Season 5 of Sister Brunch is brought to you by Trujillo Productions. The show co-creators are Franchin Cox, Anya Adams, Christabel and Zia Boddy, and Brittany Turner. Sister Brunch is a Woman Make Movies production assistance program project. The land Franchin records on, Los Angeles, is the original land of the Tongva and Chumash people.